This is astounding, that half the mortgages outstanding today would not be re-underwritten today, which tells me that one out of two homeowners, if they go to refinance today, will get shot down.
Welcome to the Alter Group Podcast on Real Estate. I'm your host, Tom Silva. Our guest today is Jaffer Husnain, Managing Partner and Co-Founder of Lifeline, a private equity firm that invests in single-family homes. Jaffer was previously an international economist with Citicorp. Jaffer, I want to open up by asking you about the somewhat confounding housing market. We've seen sales increase 6 out of 9 last months, but we continue to be about 30% below peak in terms of housing prices. How do you think we should read the current market?
I think your numbers on the sales side are correct. Sales have picked up in recent months. Part of that is simply that we are now into the second anniversary of the government being really, providing direct incentives for first-time home buyers. We've lapped that now by 2 years. So 2 years ago, huge boom in sales. Last year, this time around, less of a boom in sales. And now we're getting the echo boom, if you will, using the analogy with baby boomers. So we've got a little bit of that echo boom going on. It's a good thing by definition, right? Up is better than down.
But at the same time, we're seeing about 10 million homes that are seriously delinquent or in foreclosure, correct?
Shadow inventory, as it's called, which is really heavily delinquent loans, 90 days plus late mortgages, plus stuff that's in foreclosure, plus stuff that is owned by the banks. If you look at the next 4-5 years, that number is, on a flow basis, going to add up to somewhere between 6 to 10, maybe 11 million homes.
People point to employment as being the key to the recession, but in many ways it's housing, isn't it?
Well, housing is a very idiosyncratic asset. You know, it is our largest individual asset by far. It reflects consumer confidence, and it impacts consumer confidence because it's not just a regular old good. It's a consumption good. It's an investment good. It's got both characteristics, and we see it every day, hopefully, right? I mean, we housing is not a discretionary purchase for us. So we see that asset, and we viscerally know when we're making money in it or when we're not making money in it.
Jaffer, a lot of people have criticized the Obama plan, the Home Affordable Modification Plan. It was thought that it would help 5 million homeowners, but only about 800,000 people ended up signing up. And out of that, the latest numbers show that about 125,000 people have actually dropped out of the program. Why do you think it hasn't worked?
The implementation is where these things get messed up. You know, people start, you know, what's that cliche? The road to hell is paved with good intentions. I don't want to quite make it that melodramatic or moral. But the fact is, people started with good intentions. People said, okay, we're going to allow these kind of loan modifications. We're going to keep people in homes. We're going to try to lower their rate to something close to 2%. You know, here's what's happening out there. Even at 2%, a lot of people aren't paying. Number one, because people aren't stupid. In general, even people who are not numerate have a very good sense of what their house is worth. This HAMP program doesn't really have a whole lot of principal modification, right? People know that if they bought a house for $400,000 that's now worth $270,000, and on a $400,000 house they had a $340,000 mortgage, their house is now worth $275,000, okay? All their equity is gone and then some. Even if their loan gets modified to 2%, that just says they've got they're basically borrowing money at 2%. They don't really own the home. It's called a rental, but you're calling it a mortgage. So they know, they're thinking, you know, no, it doesn't make sense to pay, number one. And then there's a substantial number of people who simply can't pay. You know, unemployment really has devastated the country. And HAMP didn't work because it had conditions that didn't allow for loan modifications on principle much. People figured out that, you know what, my house isn't worth what it was, so principle's got to come down. Whether that's good policy or not, that's a separate question. I have my very strong views on that. But the fact is, if principle doesn't come down, then they're still going to owe the same amount of money. And they're thinking, you know, I just don't want that liability. I'll let them foreclose on me. It's taking 700 plus days to foreclose on a house, right? So I'll just live in this house for free or do something and save the money so that I can ultimately pay the bank a fraction of what I own, what I owe, right?
Joffre, a quarter of mortgage holders right now are underwater. And I think you're one of the very few people who's actually thought about the psychological effects of that on the population, the extent to which the home is so much a source of esteem, if you like, and a sense of prosperity. Give us just a little sense of how you think that's going to affect the way we deal with this crisis.
Just two variations, kind of what I call the can't pay and the won't pay. There are people who can't pay. They simply don't have the money. So for them, you've got to have some kind of, okay, well, if you really can't pay and if there's no hope of you ever paying, then we got to get you out of this house. And we got to get you out of the house with dignity, with self-respect, so that your kids aren't scarred with this stuff for life. This is a big deal. We do not want to inflict this trauma on our society. And get them into rental housing and let them try and work hard and rebuild. Rebuild themselves financially and in a family way. For others who won't pay, you know, there are people who may have the money. Appeal to them in a different way. You can't force people to do things they don't want to do, right? You can't haul every, you know, we don't have debtor's prison anymore. A foreclosure doesn't send somebody to jail, unless they're lying, of course. For them, there have to be other solutions. There is no one solution. There are plenty of good solutions out there. And to me, it is a matter of social, political will. Financials are now lined up to work on this.
Joffre, I want to call to attention a couple of things that we should be hopeful about. One is the fact that inventory has not grown significantly. In fact, this last year, we added fewer homes to the housing stock than any year since 1968. Can you give us other examples of things that you think offer hope?
Well, look, the demographic argument is very powerful, right? Unlike other developed economies, we're growing. You know, we have about a percent per year of growth in demand for housing. Not every year, but over a cycle. It's about a percent. That's about a million units. That's just natural demand. Another half a percent comes from obsolescence, housing simply falling apart. This is not a permanent, it doesn't last forever. At least not the houses that were built anything other than, 100 years ago of solid stone and brick that will last for another 300 years. So the demographic argument is strong. The problem with the demographic argument is it's a very slow-moving process. We can't open the gates, although some have suggested, including a friend of mine who runs a very large mortgage company, that there should be immigration tied to a very specific investment in homes. They come in, they don't go on welfare, they contribute. It's like there's a variation of a jobs program for immigration. I forget the moniker. I think it's called EB-5. But have an EB-5 subscript homes where people come in, buy a bunch of homes, live in them, don't go on welfare rolls, pay their own way, and after 3, 4, 5 years of good behavior and continued ownership, they get a green card to the U.S. To me, that's a fairly politically fraught discussion. So, you know, it may be more theoretical than anything else. But there are solutions to this problem. It's a massive problem. It's a horrendous problem. But it is a lot simpler than curing cancer.
Joffre, there are people who think that the GSEs, Fannie and Freddie, need to go away. And there are others who say that you simply don't have a housing market without the GSEs. Where do you stand on this?
In an ideal world, there should be no incentives in housing. Everything should work out fine. Housing should be a good. There should be supply, demand, prices should clear. The reality is the government is involved in housing. The government is involved in a lot of assets. What the government ought to be doing very carefully is, if it is to be involved, encourage the right kind of involvement, or at least make sure that it's not providing a disincentive to the solution of this problem. Right now, there is no real mortgage market outside the GSEs and FHA. There really isn't much, and that's a problem. because it's not a rate issue. It's not that you can get a mortgage at 9% and, boy, it's really expensive. It's that most people can't get a mortgage. Half of the, as I said, half of the mortgages that are outstanding right now, if they were re-underwritten today, they would not be granted. That tells me that, that's a little scary. So you need the GSEs right now. We can have a long-term discussion of where the GSEs go afterwards, but now is not the time. The economic phrase that people use is pro-cyclical regulation or pro-cyclical thoughts. Right now, and that's not a good thing, by the way, right now, because pro-cyclical, when you're on a downside, means the downside gets even worse. So we've got to be really careful not to get caught up in ideological discussion. We can have ideological discussions. I think that's healthy. But to actually implement regulations that will make the business cycle worse is dangerous.
We are awash in statistics right now about the housing market, and I was wondering if you could help us parse what's truly significant from what really doesn't have much implications. Give us a sense of some of the stats you think are really important to know right now.
Number one, what people may not realize, and by people I don't mean folks like you or me, I mean folks who do the regulation, they confuse housing with mortgage. It's not the same. They are very different. They have different roles in society, and they have different roles in getting people to think about the market. That's one thing that people really do need to think about. The other thing they need to think about is where we are today. The fact that half of mortgages out there right now could not be re-underwritten today. When people know that and feel that viscerally, that puts them on the defensive because they say, oh, darn, if I ever have to move, what happens? God forbid this happens. God forbid that happens. So the fact that half of the mortgage right now is potentially distressed worries me a lot because that reflects society and that reflects the potential to really crimp consumer spending. I think housing is the number one, two, and three issue right now.
Part of the trauma I think that's been facing people is the fact that at a time when home ownership reached a record level, 69%, most people were convinced that they could always rely on the value of their homes, if nothing else. And I think what we're witnessing is really a failure in confidence, isn't it?
Housing has never really gone down in any particular year other than once in the early 90s and then in the recent history that we've gone through. People haven't lived through this. So given that this is a fairly unique problem that we've never faced in our lives before, we better have some creative solutions. The solutions that worked in an environment where prices were going up and just stalled out for a year or two are not likely to be solutions that work today. We've really got to be creative. And I don't know, does that creativity come from government? Does it come from the private sector? Does it come from everywhere? I hope it comes from everywhere.
Well, Jaffer, I wanted to thank you for joining us today.
Thank you. Thank you, Tom.
To listen to more Alter Group podcasts or to read our Alter Now blog, visit www.altergroup.com.